God, please use me as your instrument and allow me to help someone here tonight. My name is Jack, and I'm an alcoholic. It's an honor and a privilege to be asked to speak at this meeting. Thank you, Rich, for asking me to come down, and Jeff and Jim and James and Steve for going to Red Robin with making us feel at home, and Rob for taking the trip for me with me. It's so weird, you know, you're going through all these cornfields and stuff, and it's like, I don't know where I am. But let's see, I have a sobriety date. It's August 22nd, 2001, and my home group is the Hartford group. We meet in Hartford on Saturday nights, 7 to 8:30 for a speaker meeting, and we have a beginner's meeting on Wednesday nights from 8 to 9, and I don't know, I love it there. It's really it's a place where I can show up and, I don't know, just, it's a great place for me to be of service, and I definitely I need it more than it needs me, you know what I mean? Like, and I feel the effects when I'm not going to regular meetings where people know who I am, and I can see, like, you know, regular people and recognize who the newcomer is and be able to go welcome them. Let's see, I also have a sponsor, and I try to help others with the 12 steps as much as possible, and I'm very nervous, but this is a cool setup here. I like being outside. I like the crickets and everything, and hope that, it's not a lot of crickets on Willis Street in Hartford. So I like to drink. Yep. I guess I just wanted to preface by saying that I was very uncomfortable before I had my first drink, and I didn't know what that was. I didn't know why I felt that way or anything. I grew up south of Boston, in a suburban town, about halfway between Boston and Providence, and, you know, no real reason to feel that way, but just kind of, it's just strange how taking a few drinks really fixed something inside me that kind of made me feel okay about who I was, and you know, it allowed me to breathe and be kind of comfortable in my own skin and talk to women and do, you know, it did something to me that I don't know that it does that to everybody who drinks, but I absolutely loved it. I love the effect produced by alcohol. And, the first time I got drunk, I was just curious and kind of went into my uncle's liquor cabinet and took a little bit from each bottle so that nobody would notice that I stole any. And I had some, like, Wild Turkey and tequila and probably some vodka. And I had it in this black water bottle. And when I drank it, it burned my throat. But, you know, it just rose to my head, and I could feel it, like that glow would come over me, and I absolutely love that feeling. And I don't know, it's definitely not something that I when I first did it was like, okay, here's how I want to hurt my family, I want to be, you know, a bad older brother. I want to mess up in school. I want to do all, that wasn't my goal with it, but that feeling, I was willing to trade whatever to get that feeling. I'm still nervous. God hasn't kicked in yet for some reason. I'm just really, I don't know. I don't know if I'm hot or if I just ate too much of that cheeseburger, but you know, the, my goal here is hopefully to say something that will connect with somebody here, and if I, you know, if I have to look silly doing it, that's okay. But I, you know, I'm really, what happened? I mean, I drank and I love the effect produced by alcohol. I said that. So, the first time that I really started partying, I was about 15 years old. You know, the first time I drank, I was 11, but the first time I really started partying was when I had my first job. And my dad was out of work, and I don't know, I just sort of like, I wanted to get a part-time job to help out, and there was a couple of options. There was like a restaurant and a donut shop at the end of my street, and for whatever reason, I picked a donut shop, and it was kind of weird. I was nervous about that job, and I sort of judged the people that were working there because I felt different than them. Like some of them had green hair and piercings in their face and stuff, and I was a little like unsure how this was going to all go down. I was a little intimidated, and the first day it was just like, party with us, smoke this, drink this, and I absolutely loved it. It was a great job for me. I would kind of come in early and get high and get drunk, and that was my day. And it was a perfect alibi because my parents were so proud of me because I was working, and good for you, you're working. But really, it was just like an excuse to party. And I was good at that job. I held that job for 2 years, and I was so good at it that they stopped having me interact with customers because I was they put a mop in my hand and said, this is a little bit better suited for you, because they didn't want their employees freestyle rapping out the drive-thru window. And I, I take a drink and I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, I really don't. Like every once in a while I would have one or two, but usually I would get way more drunk than I expected. And it, it quickly progressed to like, I'm the guy you got to kind of prop up in the corner that, I went too far again. And it was a lot of fun at first, but, I started getting invited to like keg parties and, I'm going out in the woods and drinking, and I was scared and intimidated the whole time. Like, I think, even before I started drinking, I was scared and intimidated by the kids that I was growing up with. We'd have like pickup street hockey games in the neighborhood, and I always felt like, embarrassed. I don't know why. I felt like in my head, I was convinced that everybody didn't want me there, or that I was embarrassed by my family, or I was embarrassed by this or that. And I just never, they were either a couple years older than me or a couple years younger than me. But, you put a couple drinks in me out in the woods and I'm fine. All of a sudden I'm okay. And it has that, I think I just had the wrong higher power. Like alcohol became my higher power. I applied that to my life, and it would do something like this. I'd walk into a room, I'd feel like intimidated. I feel like everybody didn't like me, and I take a few drinks, and all of a sudden, everybody loves me, and I'm fine. And that's that power was working in my life for quite some time. But things that I loved that were really important to me became less important because I was going after that feeling. I wanted to party, and so. If you want to be on the team, you got to be at school. I played hockey since I was like 8 years old. It's funny. I don't always tell the story, but the first time that I remember like being caught in a lie, I was probably like on the Pee Wee hockey team, and we were pretty good. We had been undefeated the entire season, and it was like, I don't know. We lost in the championship, and I was really sad, and I was crying in the locker room, but I was like embarrassed to be crying. And so the coaches were like, oh, you guys had a great season. Jack, don't cry. It's okay. You put your best effort out there. And I was like, no, you don't understand. I bet my hamster on the game. Like I lost my Speedy, the hamster. I had to give him to this other kid. Cause I bet that's why I'm upset. I don't know why that came to my head, but it was like, I would lie when the truth was better. Like I really was sad that we lost. We our goalie had not let up any goals the entire season, and I just thought it would be impossible to lose. I lie. I would lie well before I ever picked up a drink. That was probably my first thing that I used. I kind of felt like if I told you what I thought you wanted to hear, that you would leave me alone and I could do what I wanted to do. I come from a family with alcoholism on both sides, and I kind of figured maybe I'm not here to talk about anybody else's drinking but my own and anybody else's story, but it's a family disease, you know what I mean? Like, and it really does, like, I think what saved my life is the fact that if you practice AA in the home, that like healing could take place for the whole family, you know? But also, you know, just because you put down the drink doesn't mean that everything's okay. And, you know, I didn't know what would set, you know, my family off the hinges. And so I would tell them what I thought they wanted to hear all the time so that, you know, you keep it, I don't know, but definitely silly stuff like the hamster thing would come up all the time where I would just be, I don't know, caught in it and not know how to get myself out of it and not know how I got there in the first place. But anyways, so yeah, things like playing sports and getting good grades, you know, stopped being as important to me. And I started to lower the bar of my expectations of what was okay for myself. And, you know, I started doing stuff like trying to reboot, you know, like, okay, this semester I'm going to do my homework. I'm going to be on top of it. It's going to be different this time, you know, and it never was, you know. I was just like restarting my life over and over again, and it was always going to be different and I could never fix it. And I don't know what that was, but I started having experiences like, you know, people give you that look of disgust and, you know, it's just, what are you doing? You know, what are you doing to yourself? And I would get that from this girl that used to sit in front of me in class. They would seat you alphabetically. So, you know, she would always be in front of me in every class and it would always be time to like pass your homework up and I would never have it. And she'd just be like, you know, what do you think? You're better than us. You don't have to do the homework. She didn't say that, but her look did all the talking. And I was just kind of, and I felt bad. I had all the best intentions. I wanted to do the work. I wanted to do the right thing, but I couldn't. I couldn't make it work. And, you know, it's amazing to me how, like, things that were happening at that time in my life, like, felt like the end of the world. And I just, you know, I'd be drinking and I'd be, you know, I'd want to stop. I would want to stop and I couldn't. And it was like, all of a sudden, this, you know, I would think like, oh, if I just hang around these people or if I just did this different or if I was in this spot, then things would be okay and I wouldn't mess up. And, you know, I didn't know that I was the problem. I didn't know that all these times it was me that was causing my own misery and me trying to run the show and me trying to set things up to go the way that I wanted them to go and the dishonesty and the, you know, I mean, it just, you know, having the police call my parents and have to come get me because I, you know, I didn't want to do any of that stuff. My mom was crying and I was just like, I felt like terrible for doing that to her, you know, but, powerlessness and unmanageability. And, you know, it's like, I got sober really young. I got sober when I was 17, just before I turned 18. And even at that age, I knew that, you know, drinking was not working for me. And I thought that if I could just stop drinking, that I would be okay. And the truth is that I didn't know how to live without it. I didn't know how to manage my life. And the longer I was sober, the more uncomfortable I felt. And the closer, it's sort of like, how long can you hold your breath? How long can you keep, you know, staying sober when you don't know how to, it was just, you know, it was painful. And I needed that relief. And so, you know, I would get sober and then I would drink and then I would get sober and I would drink and I'd be counting days and I'd be like proud of myself. You know, I got 17 days. And then next thing you know, like people would just look at me like sideways head. Like, what are you talking about? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I was like just anxious and uncomfortable and very afraid. And that, you know, that's just how I thought things were going to be. And I don't know. It brings you to some dark places, you know, I thought that it was just the drugs and the alcohol, but really like my thinking and I guess you would call it, you know, a spiritual malady. I didn't know what the hell that was, but coming into AA now, you know, they call it a spiritual malady. I was sick and I didn't, I had that emptiness, that void that I tried anything to fill. And then, you know, it would get to a point where, you know, if you're not finding something to replace, you know, drugs and alcohol, then all of a sudden I'm left with just myself and I don't know how to stay sober. So I would go back to it. And it's weird because the last time I drank, I don't even really... A couple of things happened leading up to it. I definitely planned to kill myself and wrote a suicide note. And my mom definitely found that and read that. And I don't think I was even drinking when that happened. I think I was sober. That's probably one of the worst things that I've done, even with drinking or not drinking, you know. To have her have to read that. And they were sending me to the guidance counselor, and it was like, you know, I'd have to go check in and talk to the person and all this stuff. And, you know, just, I don't know. And then I remember a friend of mine, I also had gotten kicked out of my junior prom for being drunk. And that happened somewhere around the same time. And my reputation of being a good kid was just nowhere near. And my friends didn't want anything to do with me, and I was drinking alone. And, you know, just all the lies were catching up to me, and I didn't know how to manage it. And so I remember my friend reached out to me because he knew I wasn't doing well, and he actually kind of invited me this summer. My junior year of high school, he invited me to play music with him again. And when I was, like, probably 13 or 14, I was playing music with him a lot. And some other guys, and I turned my back on them because I wanted to party, and they, you know, they weren't interested in that. We were kind of going in, like, different directions, you know. And a lot of parts of my story, like, certain people are sober at the exact right moment for me. And, you know, these guys happened to be into, like, straight-edge hardcore music, and they were, like, not drinking. They were, like, doing stuff like driving to... You know, driving to go see concerts in like VFW halls and stuff like that. And we would, so I got introduced to this whole thing. We were playing punk rock music together, and, you know, it gave me some hope. It gave me something to focus on. And I really think that, like, that collective experience of, like, us all being together gave, you know, it was a power greater than myself that was working for me for a time being. But, you know, there's so many things that I use to try to treat that spiritual malady that ultimately don't last. And but, you know, him reaching out to me really, really made a difference in my life. And these guys kind of showed me that you didn't have to be drunk and high to enjoy yourself. And, you know, I was trying. I kept getting drunk, but I remember, like, you know, being at the New Bedford Reflections Hall, and they have, like, these 12 steps on the wall there, and it's, like, a place where they have, like, meetings, and these kids had, like, rented out this punk rock show there and stuff like that. And I was, like, drinking in the parking lot before. And I just, you know, and I remember going, I'm jumping all over the place, but I remember going to my mom's, anniversary one year, and this particular year too. And it was, you know, we were having a really rough time, and I was constantly fighting with my parents. And, you know, it was her anniversary, and they asked me to give her cake that year. And so I got up to a podium like this, and I was like, you know, "Hi, my name is Jack, and my mom's an alcoholic." And everybody laughed at me, and I felt way too comfortable. It spooked me. I was just like, this is creepy. I don't like this feeling. And I won a big book in the raffle. And, you know... It was, you know, I identified with the speaker. It was really weird the whole night. And so all these things are going on, and I don't know, like, I never really, my last drink, I didn't just, like, wake up one day and say, like, this is the day I'm going to stop drinking. I never planned on staying sober. I never really thought that it would work. But, you know, I was at this party, and they had a bunch of my friends asked me if they wanted me to get booze before, and I was like, no, I'm not drinking. And that sure enough, I had a beer in my hand and I was drinking. And I don't remember even making that decision, but I remember looking around and there wasn't enough to get me where I needed to be. And I was like, I hate these people. I don't want to be here. And I left. And I was like, you know, trying to pat myself on the back, like you did the right thing. And, you know, I absolutely hated the person that I was staring at in the mirror. Absolutely hated it. And it was just, my skin was crawling. I couldn't get it to work. And I really wanted to fix my life, but I didn't know how. And sure enough, it wasn't too much longer after that I wound up in my first AA meeting. Before I wound up in my first AA meeting, I actually had an honest conversation with my mom about it. And I had a similar bad night to that one, but I was actually sober that night, and I was at the same thing, just the uncomfortability, the spirit, you know. I was at a party and everybody was drinking and I wasn't, and I just was like, I couldn't stand it. I had to get myself out of there. I guess at that point I really knew that I had a problem, because putting it down wasn't fixing it, you know? Like, I thought that if I could just put the drink down that my problem would be fixed, and it wasn't that. It was something more. And that's when I said, you know, Mom, I think I have a problem. And she was really kind and nice about it. She pulled out a schedule book and showed me how to read, you know, the different types of meetings that you guys have. And, you know, oh, this is a discussion meeting. This is an open meeting. This is there's young people's meetings. You may want to check one of those out, things like that. And, you know, I'm the kind of person who I'll make a decision and I don't follow it with any action, you know, like I'm the kind of person that, you know, thinks about paying a bill, feels like they paid it. It's like, congratulations, you paid the bill. Great job. And then my lights get turned off, which has actually happened to me in sobriety. So I think if you don't do something like that every 5 years, then they take away your AA membership. But it's not mandatory, but pretty much like I didn't go to a meeting for a little while after that. But when I did, I was so scared. I was so afraid. And, this guy came up to me and introduced himself to me, and he said, welcome, you know, and he told me that they had a meeting on Thursday night and he would love for me to go. And, I didn't have anything else going on. So I drove my beat up station wagon to this step meeting there. And, when I got there, there was this guy who had like an Irish brogue, and I thought he was the president of AA because he had 25 years of sobriety and an Irish brogue, which, I mean, to me is like, I don't know, everything he said sounded like gold. And, yeah, I mean, they assigned me a sponsor at that meeting, and, you know, this guy had, they gave out the little raffle tickets, and this guy, like, you know, wrote his name on the back of the raffle ticket and said, you know, here you go. And I never called him. You know, I actually only called him once. And, you know, it was just kind of, he served that purpose of like, you know, if anybody asked me, do you have a sponsor? And I could be like, yes, that, you know, Brian's my sponsor, that guy over there. And, you know, I looked up to him. He didn't have to say anything to me to actually have an effect on me. Like, you know, he was definitely sober and he had a leather jacket and a motorcycle and he had a hot wife. And I was like, okay, great. You know, that guy's my sponsor. But I had gotten accepted to school and I was like, there's no way I'm going to stay sober. I started getting freaked out because, you know, it was, I don't know, the end of summer. And I didn't know how I was possibly ever going to stay sober, you know, in this environment. And I started freaking out and I asked this other guy, Bill, to be my sponsor. And he pulled me aside and he was like, you know, okay, Jack, I'll help you out. You got to do two things though. He's like, one, as soon as you get to Connecticut, I want you to get another sponsor. And two, I want you to read that big book, even if it's only like one page or two pages a day. Just read, try to read one or two pages a day. And, you know, I didn't listen to this, to the read the big book suggestion, but it did make sense to me to get another sponsor as soon as I got there. So I was going to this freshman orientation, and, this is where I really feel like, God, like, definitely played a role in the people kind of placed in my path. I was at this freshman orientation, and they break you up into smaller groups, and it's like kind of like introducing yourselves to other people. What's your favorite movie? Blah blah blah. And next thing you know, they're like, Jack, what's your biggest fear about college? And you know, I had been going to a lot of discussion meetings, and for whatever reason, I just felt that I was honest, and I was like, I can't control myself when I drink. I'm afraid I'm gonna fail out as soon as I get here. And so the guy who was leading that workshop, his best friend was in AA. And so they invited me to come stay with them before I moved in. They sent me a letter in the mail, and they highlighted the schedule book, and they were like, you know, recommending meetings for me to attend. And I drove down there to go see them. I stayed with them, and they introduced me to like all these people. And I got a list of, you know, I put my hand up. I said, I'm new. I'm moving to town. I need help. I don't know what to do. I was at this meeting in New Haven called the Beyond Your Wildest Dreams group. It was a young people's meeting, and there was like all these people coming up to me afterwards, and I had like 30 names and numbers, and I met this guy. I had what Bill in the back of my head said. He was like, you know, you got to find a sponsor. You got to find a sponsor as soon as you get there. And I met this guy. I think right outside, within five minutes of talking to him, like he definitely, you know, the big book says like somebody armed with the facts about themselves can win the confidence of another alcoholic in, you know, a short time. Well, that's what happened. I mean, he was telling me about how he had gotten drunk, got kicked out of, you know, his alcoholism got him kicked out of school, and then he got sober in AA, and his family members were in AA too, and he also that when he got sober, he went back to school and he graduated. And I was like, how the hell did you do that? You know, like, you know, tell me where to sign. I'll do whatever you say, man. Like, I was willing. And this was after like being sober for close to a year. And I was really uncomfortable. I hadn't worked any steps. I was just not drinking, hanging on for dear life. And these guys saved my life. They came and picked me up. I didn't have transportation. I lived probably about like 15 minutes away from where the meetings were that I was going to, and they would come out, my sponsor would come pick me up and bring me to the meeting, and then we'd go out to coffee afterwards, and when the coffee shop closed, we'd go to the diner, and then after the diner closed, he'd come drop me off on campus, and he would say, "Thank you, Jack." And I'd be like, "Thank me? Thank you. You're the one that's helping me. I'm dying here, and you're helping me." I had no idea that what he was doing was helping him too. But these guys were really active in carrying the message of AA to other people and helping others. And, you know, it was really cool. It's inspired me. I was like, I had a little bit of hope for the first time. And I would meet Tim, you know, on the weekends. We would go. I never felt so good at, like, I would wake up on Saturday mornings. My home group was on Friday nights. And I would wake up on Saturday mornings after being at the meeting and staying out late. And everybody that I was living with was getting wasted. And, you know, my fridge was stocked with booze. And, you know, there was, you know, people passed out when I would get home. And in the morning, I'd get up and I wasn't hungover. And everybody else was. And I was going to my meeting to meet with my sponsor and to the men's meeting. And we would sit by this river and have a meeting outside, kind of like this, in the summertime, except it was in the morning. Anyways, I started to take this guy's suggestions, and I started to feel different, you know, because I would use the phone a lot. I would call people if I was feeling unsafe. You know, I remember I hated these guys that lived in my hall. Like, I couldn't stand them, and I was jealous. I was like jealous that they could drink and that I couldn't, and I hated them for it. And it's so funny because not even a year later, these guys became my friends. And the only person that changed was me. And what happened was I followed this guy's suggestions. I met with him. I was willing to go to meetings. I remember, you know, Rich and I were talking about making coffee before the meeting, and you know, nobody asked me, "Would you like to make coffee?" They were like, "You're making coffee." This dude with tattoos on his head that was like, you know, like a mountain. This guy, Adrian, he was like, you're making coffee. And I was like, okay. and so I would get there early, and they had this shuttle bus that would take the people to the bars because, there was a lot of drunk driving accidents on, you know, and I think somebody had died the year before I got there. And so they instituted these buses that were bringing people to the bars. And I would take the drunk bus to the meeting around 5:30, and I would go and I would set up the hall, make the coffee, put the big books out, thud on the chairs. And you know, I met all these amazing people, and I swear it was like, those are some of my favorite memories of my life, you know, getting to know all these people. And you know, there was this meeting on Wednesdays where this guy, we used to always share, and you knew he was wrapping up his share because he would always say the same thing at the very end. You ever met anybody like that? I don't know. He would always be like, and you know, this morning I didn't smell booze on my breath. And that's how you knew he was about to wrap up what he was say. And you know, and we're going out to coffee, we're doing this, and you know, and my sponsor was, you know, his apartment, everyone would go over there. We'd have pizza over there. He lived above like an Italian restaurant. And I remember one night, like, you know, all these guys were at the meeting talking about spirituality, and they're playing like Grand Theft Auto in front of a TV. And they're like, you know, smash that dude, smash him. You know, like they're like yelling at the TV screen playing video games. And there was one night where we were all playing charades, and I was just like, looking around, and I'm like, what the hell am I doing? Like, what is this? You know, like, but I had nothing better. And I don't know what it was about it, but I was willing to continue going forward in the steps. And, you know, I remember in my early sobriety, I was hearing kind of what I wanted to hear. I heard things like, you know, just work a step a year and you'll be fine. Or just don't drink, put the plug in the jug. And, you know, and I didn't want to look at myself. I never want to look at myself. I, if I could go as long as I physically can before it is so painful, I will not look at myself. But that's just, I try to avoid my problems at all costs. And I don't know, something happened where I was presented with this opportunity, and my sponsor and I were talking in the car, and he goes, you know, when you're ready to do a formal third step, let me know and we'll do it. And I called him and I met with him, and we went up to like East Rock Park, which is like, you know, it was like a really nice little look, and we're talking about stuff. I don't remember what he was saying. I just remember that I'm praying on the side of this mountain with this dude. And he goes, you know, the way you know you did your third step is you got a pen in your hand, you're writing your fourth. And so I wake up in the morning thinking I'm still on step one, and then I'm writing my fourth step, and I'm like, well, don't I need some time here? You know, like, but I trusted him. I trusted him, and I wanted what he had. And so I was willing to start doing some of that stuff. And, you know, it took me like several months to get through it. But really all it did was take me several months in an afternoon where I was really pissed off. And if you haven't done a four step and you're nervous about it, like, I don't know, like, how can you can't explain what it's like to bite into an orange to somebody who's never like tasted that and bitten to an orange. So like, until you, like, it's one of those things where like, I had to experience it for myself, and it wasn't that bad. This is stuff that I'm thinking about all the time anyway. I got all these things running around in my head, and all I had to do was write it down on paper and talk to somebody about it. Talk to, you know, get honest with another person and God, you know, and it really, it kind of clicked in to me that it was me and God during that fifth step when I thought my sponsor was asleep. But he wasn't. He would stop me and talk about certain things and show my part in things. I don't know. It was, you know, really, these guys just showed me how to have a relationship with a higher power that I didn't understand. And they showed me how to ask for help from self-centeredness and fear that I didn't know I had. And they showed me through their actions and through sometimes making fun of me, and you know, not always being nice. They showed me how to, you know, get my life on track and how to enjoy myself. Like, you know, I was amazed at how, like, I can't really pinpoint the exact moment when I stopped obsessing about having another drink, but it was somewhere around after I'd done the fifth step and I did six and seven. I said the prayer, and it was just weird. It just this feeling came over me like, I'm not going to drink tonight, and I felt safe for the first time in I don't know how long, and I was living amongst people that were, you know, drinking. My roommate was drinking himself out of school. He failed out after the first year, and it was like, that guy saved my life too, because I remember, like, just, it was like looking in the mirror, you know. He was making all the same noises that I would make when I would wake up after a night of drinking. He was talking to me about how he felt, and I could relate to everything he was saying. And it was incredibly frustrating at times, because at any given night at 3 a.m, like, the whole crew of people would come in and wake me up, and, you know, I didn't always feel safe where I was living, but it kept me motivated. I knew exactly what would happen if I didn't move forward with these steps, like the guys that I was trusting in the AA were suggesting to me. So, like, my whole life, I was always concerned with, you know, myself, getting my way, what I wanted, what do you think about me, what do I think about what you think about me, all this stuff's running through my head all the time, and these guys are telling me to think about what can you do for others, how can you help other people, and they weren't just telling me these words, they were showing me with their actions. Remember, like I said, they were thanking me after dropping me off and spending the night talking to me, and I was watching them get people into detox and, you know, and sit with them and talk to them, and you know, it was, and they were clearly having a good time. This group that I was going to on Friday nights, like, you know, it's a little wacky and people are yelling stuff. And but one thing was clear to me is that they were not as miserable as I was. Something was happening for them that wasn't happening for me. And so, you know, you just, like, a little bit of faith and a little bit of willingness was all it took for me to start to build this relationship with a higher power and to build this fellowship around me that was absolutely wonderful. And they were telling me to give my number out to guys and try and help out. And so I was doing this, and you know, I'll never forget when one guy kept calling me, you know, for the first time, and how, like, there's like something that clicked, like, I wasn't realizing that I was retaining all this information until I was talking to another person about, you know, he was sharing with me what he was going through, and I was trying to help him. And all of a sudden, like, it's flowing out of me, all this stuff that I didn't even know was in there. And I believe that principle of, you know, one alcoholic sharing with another, you know, that's the most important thing that happens in AA, the best form of service that we have. If that guy who didn't shake my hand and welcome me and ask me to go to that meeting on Thursday, if he didn't do that, I may never have come back, you know? And so, you know, we have an opportunity to make a difference in people's lives all the time by just, you know, like the guy, Mike, who talked to me before the meeting, like, you know, he made me feel better, and he didn't even have to say much, but, like, I was nervous because I, you know, don't know any of you except for a handful of people. And, you know, one alcoholic sharing with another, like, really, I don't know. So I got this guy calling me. Another guy's calling me. It's starting to work. I start to feel better. And the craziest thing was that, you know, I would feel so good after coming home back from my home group that I didn't feel like thirsty anymore. I didn't feel like I needed a drink. And the other kids that I was going to school with, you know, I was playing music with some of them. I got involved at the radio station. I was doing a radio show from like 3 a.m. to 7 a.m. And, you know, I was having fun. I was meeting people, and they liked me just for me. I didn't have to be like wasted for them to like me. And I was starting to be okay with myself, and I could talk to people, and you know, everyone's coming up to me, oh, hey, Jack Mack, oh, you know, and they didn't even think twice about the fact that I wasn't drinking. And I thought, you know, anytime I said no to alcohol, that everybody's obsessing about that. Nobody is spending more time thinking about that than me. Like, just because I think about it constantly and the stuff that these guys in AA were sharing with me how to do was relieving that self-obsessive nature that I have. And you know, there's stuff in that was like, you know, if you're going to be in a situation where there's alcohol, see what you can bring to the occasion. See how you can make it better for other people. See who's having a bad time and welcome them in. And that's what I started doing. I started feeling better. And then I made these friends that didn't drink, and some of them were just, I was mentioning before that like a lot of people in my life were sober at the exact right time for me. And they were just more interested in playing video games or going to, you know, see music. And so I lived with them my sophomore year, my junior year of college, and I didn't have to be in that. I mean, I was on campus. It was still crazy. But, you know, where I lived, my home was not, you know, filled with drugs and alcohol. So, and that's when I really started getting active in AA, and I felt like a million bucks. I was, you know, I was coming home on my breaks, and I was trying to make amends. You know, I did a lot of damage to people's property, and I would go back and talk to these people and admit there's people that like didn't even know that I destroyed their lawn or did things like, and that was terrifying for me. I had to pray the entire time. I was praying, talking to my sponsor, you know, help me, you know, and you know, like I said before, I put things off. I'm a procrastinator, and there were certain things that. You know, I asked, you know, is there anything I can do to right this wrong? And people asked me to do, and I would put it off. And I would feel so guilty. I would be like, you know, just, it was weird. Like, I had made this appointment to talk to my football coach. I'm not sure if any of this is like, this is probably the most boring stuff you could ever hear. But anyways, I'm talking, like, but I owed this amends to my football coach. And I made an appointment with him. And I was working doing snow removal, and the snowstorm came, and I didn't call and cancel. I just didn't show up. And so for like a year or so, I never rescheduled the appointment. And I was like looking. I went home to see my parents, and the newspaper was there, and he had moved to another school, and he was on top of the sports section, and he was just like, "You owe me an amends, you know, MF-er." Like, you know, it was like I saw he was posing for this, like, like the newspaper was talking to me. He had that look in his eye. He was just like, and so I called him. I made contact with him, and went to see him. And it was like, it was the most ridiculous thing. Like, you know, he basically said to me, you know, I knew you were lying. You failed the test. You know, I gave you the opportunities to you know, do the right thing, and you didn't do the right thing, and you failed the test. I'm glad you're doing okay now. That was it. Like, wasn't anything complicated, but I was going through all this time, thinking about all this stuff, and feeling like, I don't know, it basically like it only hurts me to not be honest about it with other people, and not take action when there's clearly action to be taken. But you know, I'm getting involved in AA. I'm going to meetings, and you know, when I'm home in Massachusetts, I got involved in meetings up there. And these guys that I met sort of found me, and they picked me up and. We're like, you know, come with us on the firing lines. We need you. And they showed me how to really, I don't know. This meeting I was going to was in Dorchester, Massachusetts, which was not the greatest area. And you know, a lot of the meetings in Massachusetts will travel to other home groups, and you trade off. And it's like, you know, you bring, they call it giving a commitment. So like, you know, our group goes to your group on this night, and you come to us on our night. And then every once in a while, the group will go to like a hospital or an institution or something like that to carry the message. And there, well, this meeting had like 35 outgoing commitments, and they would split us up into, you know, two different groups, and we'd be running around Boston, going to the homeless shelter, going here, going there. And, you know, I didn't need a GPS because I always had a new guy in my car, and he's like, bang a left up there, go over right. You know, he's like, there you go on Mass Ave over there, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, so like, but I was having so much fun with these guys, and they were showing me how to really enjoy life and that love and service. You know, we were just taking all these trips. I remember my friend Patrick was like, you know, I'm going to speak at this meeting in Pennsylvania, kind of like what me and Rob did tonight. And we went down. And I, you know, I don't know anybody in Pennsylvania, but we go down and it's awesome. Like, I remember just meeting these people that are so excited about being sober, and it's contagious. You know, it's like, I don't sip my booze, you know, and I don't get drunk by watching other people drink, you know, like I just take it. I loved hard alcohol, because it did the job faster. And I would drink it as fast as I could so that I could get as drunk as fast as I could. And, you know, these guys take the same approach to AA, and they're willing to go to any lengths, like across state lines. And it was really inspiring to me. And I carried that into my life, and I tried to do that to the best of my ability. And, you know, they say in the big book, like, God will show you how to create the fellowship you crave. And, you know, I don't know, we formed a meeting on campus, and I got involved in service in lots of different areas. And, you know, and then I actually, you know, graduated, I graduated from college, and I did well. I was able to accomplish what I thought was impossible with God's help and AA, and all this stuff was going on, and I got a really good job, and I was, my whole life kind of swung in that I was working nights and weekends, and I had to switch up all my meetings and everything. And, you know, but I kept staying active, and I kept close to trying to help newcomers and be with, you know, my friends. And, you know, we would do these road trips, and we found a Saturday meeting out in like Danbury, Connecticut, which was like a 45-minute hour drive for us. And it was amazing because we, you know, it was like four or five of us that would do this. We would go out there, and it was like every week somebody else was having a rough week. And every week somebody else had the spiritual advice to offer one another. It didn't matter like how much time you had. And it was, I just had so much fun doing that. And so my home group was my car for a little while. But then we decided to set the gas, the economy went down and the gas prices went way up in 2008. And we decided to form a meeting in Hartford. And, you know, that was a really cool experience, except that as soon as I started getting involved in that, like after like the first 6 months, my schedule changed again and I couldn't go. So I was away for that for a while. I don't know, I never stopped going to meetings, and I never stopped praying or trying to help others, but I would get off track from time to time. And it's like anytime you get off track, it's not that hard to get back on track. It's just a matter of getting honest with somebody about what you're dealing with. At least that's my experience. I don't know. I know that for me, like, it just – it was so great that my sponsor always made me feel okay about what I was going through, and I never felt judged. I always felt like he could make me laugh at myself and make me put it in terms to understand. And it's funny how when you go through something difficult, like invariably, like several months later, I'm in contact with somebody else who's going through the exact same thing, and I can share my experience with that, and it helps me and it helps them. You know, I have a friend who moved away to California, and you know, I was working nights and I was going through this breakup, and I'm feeling insane. I can't sleep. I'm thinking about all this stuff, and I got a friend on the West Coast who's 3 hours behind me who just went through a breakup, and he's talking to me about all this stuff too, and he's giving me hope and helping me. And I don't know, it's just amazing how God works in my life. I mean, I don't understand what that power is, or I don't even try to define it. I love that you guys say that set aside prayer at the beginning. I think that's beautiful, you know, because my opinion's always changing on it. My experience is always changing, and I hope it always does. I hope I continue to grow spiritually, and you know, what was right for me in those 4 years while I was living on campus. I don't know how I'm doing on time, but what was right for me then, you know, was wrong for me years later. And the ways that I try to help people is always changing, and it's not always the same. But I still have hope, and I'm still really, like, grateful to be sober. And I know that when I stop being useful to my fellows and I stop being active in AA, then this gift is not going to be here for me, and I'm going to go back to a drink. And there's a lot more misery waiting for me. But there's a lot more joy and love and heartbreak and awesome things, ups and downs, if I stay on this ride. And thank you so much for my God and Alcoholics Anonymous.